Hey everyone, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 104. We're going to get into an interview with Scott Bernstein from Jambase, who's going to talk with us about the St. Louis 93 release. So we'll get right into that. Just first, wanted to just do a couple quick announcements. First, if you haven't yet, check out Broke Down Podcast, Jonathan's Grateful Dead podcast. Hope people are enjoying it. If you haven't checked it out yet, definitely do. We also want to say thanks to everyone who has supported HF Pod Plus. We're getting some great feedback and some support from people out there, including CJ, David, Brian, Ben, Colin, Jason, Matt, Justin, another CJ, and Jeff. So thank you guys all for supporting us. And if you can, check the show notes. You'll see a link to Patreon and support HF Pod Plus. So as you think about the St. Louis 93 release, Scott and his team at Jambase will be putting up some content. A couple tracks from the soundboard release are already up, and I think some more will be up the day that this episode goes live. So check out Jambase. We'll link to the most recent article. One thing that Scott says during our interview, which is super important, is that as Phish releases these, we just got SPAC 95, what, a month ago or so. Every time they release these, I think it's really important that people go out, buy these releases, and show Phish that the support of the community. We know that the more people that buy them, the more often they'll release them. So let's all go support these and get them when they come out. This episode is going to be structured around some discussion of both the shows from St. Louis 93, and then we're going to drop some tracks from the audience recordings in there just to give people a flavor if you're not familiar with the shows. But really fun conversation. We appreciate Scott coming on. If you're heading to Baker's Dozen in New York and you're looking for a hotel, a listener of ours named Avi, his family owns a hotel in New York pretty close to MSG called the San Carlos Hotel. We told him that we would mention that on the podcast. He's a listener and we appreciate his support. And so if you're looking for a hotel or want to check it out, please do so. And as always, review us on iTunes if you haven't. You can follow us on Twitter at HFPod and send us thoughts, feedback, comments, ideas at helpingfriendlypodcast@gmail.com. We appreciate everyone's support and everyone listening. And we'll get into the interview with Scott. So keep on rocking. Hey, everyone. Jonathan and I are here with Scott Bernstein, who's been here before. He's at Hey Scotty B and also at Yem Blog, or YEM Blog, as some of us like to call it. Scott, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Scott, we originally connected several years ago. I think we just determined this is your fourth appearance on the podcast. Thank you for always coming on and for helping us grow and always getting our stuff out there to your audience. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. You guys do good work, and I'm glad to be a part of it when I can.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about Jambase, of course. For those of you who don't know, Scott's with Jambase, although I'm sure that most of you do know. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But the reason that we reconnected with Scott on this was to talk about the St. Louis 93 release, which was announced a couple weeks ago now. And I think when this episode goes up, it'll be a little less than a week before the release comes out. But Scott, you were, I think you had said that this was maybe at the top of your wish list or near the top of your wish list since Live Phish started. Did I get that right?
Okay. Consider that the Holy Grail is Big Cypress on video with Martin Scorsese going through the footage and putting together the perfect cut. That's number one. Number two on my list would be the first night of Deer Creek 1999. But right after that was always this April 14th, 1993 Phish show, which is just stellar from top to bottom. And you throw in the band's other visit to St. Louis from 1993, and that's just an added bonus that I didn't even think about when I was putting together my list of ideal live Phishes. So yes, I'm very excited for this.
Nice, and it'll officially come out on March 31st. So Scott, have you just been pulling strings behind the scenes for years just to get this released, or is that what we should be led to believe?
I mean, you know, I went back and I tried to find if I had mentioned it before, and I definitely did it a few times. I didn't write it up or anything like that. I wish I could take more credit for this, but this is, Kevin Shapiro represents us fans well, and this is just another example of that.
Pretty good example. I think I know of a few people in St. Louis who are ecstatic. These were among their first shows, and so it's kind of legendary stuff. And there's kind of poor recordings, at least the April show, right?
Absolutely. And that's really, you know, I'll never forget. I was at Skidmore College. It must have been like 1997 or 1998. And I got a maybe third generation audience recording of that April 14th show. And it was terrible quality, but the music on it was so good. And that's, you know, I think there are a couple of elements that you look at for what makes a great live Phish release. And one of them is obviously the quality of the show. But also what I think is important is the quality of what recordings are already out there. And the recordings of both these shows weren't the greatest. And, you know, we got a taste of the Reba from the second show on From the Archives recording. And right. I remember when Kevin played it, I was like, wow, if that's what these St. Louis shows sound like, we're really in for a treat. And it really is. It's a great mix. It sounds great to my ears. So, you know, it's got everything going for it. And it's such an upgrade to what was previously out there.
Yeah,
I'm sure everybody's going to be pretty ecstatic about it once they get their hands on this.
Scott, I want to just make one note in this. We live in a different America now where I think it's okay to take credit for things that maybe aren't your doing. So I think you should take full credit for this. And I think we should just say that, you know, it's all you. So thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm glad to do it for all the Phish fans out there.
So we're obviously going to come back and talk about both of the shows that are going to be featured on the release. Scott mentioned them April 14th and August 16th of 93, sort of two different points in Phish history, even though they're from the same year. It's interesting. So we'll get into that a little bit more. But Scott, wanted to start by just talking to you a little bit about what's going on with Jambase, any exciting things coming up, how things have been evolving. I think when we first talked several years ago, you were undergoing a pretty big overhaul, and obviously that all has happened, and you guys have been adding content, adding features, and doing all kinds of really cool stuff. What's on the horizon for you?
Well, you know, the latest thing, we did a kind of a soft launch of a completely revamped the search function for the site, and now you put in Phish Makisopa and you'll get some results that of reviews of shows where Phish played that song, or you you know, put in King Crimson St. Louis, and if their band's playing a show there, that show will come up. And just the search that we have on the site right now that we just put up about a week ago is really killer. And, you know, it looks great. And it really takes advantage of this great of this site that we launched about a year and a couple of months ago at this point, yeah. And have really been, you know, making the most of utilizing this new platform, and will continue to do so in the future. So it's just a really a good sign of what's to come. And so, you know, it's great to have that for our articles in terms of, you know, we in this generation, this day, everything is so now. The news cycle is 15 minutes and then people are on to the next story. I'm sure that, you know, when Phish announces tour dates, already the conversation moves on to something else by the next day. So it's great to, but we've written so much great content over the years. It's great to have ways that it resurfaces better, and that search engine really does it. So it's nice, and I'm excited for our, you know, extensive Phish coverage of Baker's Dozen and the other summer shows. And we got a video series in the works that I think people will be pleased about. And so things are great in the world of Jambase.
Any more teaser with respect to that video series?
What's up? I'd love to, but then I'd have to kill you. But let's just say if you've liked our past video series, I think you'll like this one.
Oh, we'll keep our eyes out.
Nice. And Scott, to your point of just about like attention spans, I mean, it's interesting. On one hand, we have the luxury of doing this as a hobby to, you know, spend an hour or so talking about Phish with someone who, you know, is fun to talk to. But I can't imagine, you know, trying to keep up with just content trends and content sort of competition on an ongoing basis. It must be a pretty stressful, just a pretty stressful industry in how attention spans continue to decrease even at this point.
It's been about 10 years since I started writing, and it's crazy how much has changed in those 10 years. And, you know, there are times when it's a bummer. You know, if you really want to lay into a review and take some time to, you know, write something that's high quality, a lot less people will read it than if it's the first review of something. And, you know, that's But, you know, we try to balance at Jambase. We're always trying to balance, you know, getting stuff up quickly, but getting stuff up that's good and that, you know, people can relate to and enjoy, and trying to, you know, bear in mind that we may not be first with something, but we'll, you know, have a better value for the reader by providing them an article that's better written.
Just writing on my blog by myself with no deadlines, I find it very quickly, even I lose interest in the thing, or I realize, that's not such a big deal anymore. And I couldn't even begin to imagine keeping the kind of pace of having to crank out so many things in just a single day.
It's crazy, but you gotta love what you do, and you know, there are some days that, you know, I don't, but most of the time I do. And you know, and Twitter has been great, you know, meeting folks like you guys and, you know, keeping our eye out for the next story. It's really been a great tool. You know, I just hope that people don't just read a headline on Twitter. They'll take the time to click through and learn about what people are talking about instead of just basing it on tweets, which I find happens sometimes.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's something that, you know, I'm sure you guys have to deal with all the time is it's nice to just, like you said, kind of take a little bit of a step back and look at something like that. But, it's hard to break through. Well, you guys are doing a great job and putting up really great content. So thanks for the good work.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And you're probably going to be all over the place this summer, festivals and whatnot. Anything in particular that you're looking forward to?
You know, I've been hearing about High Sierra for decades, and I'm finally going to have my first chance to go out there. You know, I went to college in Saratoga Springs, New York, so doing SPAC for 4th of July weekend was a pretty regular thing. Mm-hmm. And with Fish not doing the SPAC run this year, it's just perfect timing. And I really like the lineup. I've heard wonderful things about the festival. So that's, you know, between that and the Baker's Dozen, I'm saying eight right now. We'll see how that evolves. It's going to be tough. I've never missed a Fish show in New York City or at Madison Square Garden since I was 16 years old. So it'll be interesting. But at the same time, I just 13 is a lot. And, you know, it gets back to the point where we were talking about earlier, you know, if you want it to be fun. And maybe there'll be a night or a couple of nights where it'll just be fine to relax and watch from home. But sure hope I pick the right nights if that's the case.
Well, you know, the thing is, if you go to the show, you've got to pack in all those desks. So if you stay home, you've at least got them there.
That is very true. It's a good point.
Scott, what are you expecting or what are some ideas that have gone through your head in terms of what Fish might do or what the possibilities are for the Baker's Dozen?
I think that the coolest thing would be if they can make it through with no repeats. I think that's really a huge question. I thought perhaps when they announced it, they would announce themes. I thought that would help them certainly sell tickets. And maybe that is still forthcoming. You know, when Page first discussed the idea of Baker's Dozen with Relics in 2007, he brought up the idea of having a theme for each night. Like, mm-hmm. for instance, his example was Boston Cream and to play songs by Boston Cream. So wouldn't that be cool? But at the same time, if they just go and do it without repeats and just try to make each night it's its own thing, you know, I could only imagine the anticipation by say night eight or night nine to figure out what they've played and what they haven't played and how excited would people start getting for those, you know, final shows.
How long would they make us wait for YAM?
Exactly. Okay. Your Twitter, you know, imagine they make you wait till show 13 for Tweezer. People would be going nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to think about.
I just, you know, if they do the Boston Cream thing, I hope I'm there for that because I want to see Four play a long time again.
Oh, man. That was incredible.
It's hopefully going to open up a little bit, you know, of space for them musically. They'll be comfortable. There'll be, you know, not a lot of travel and logistics and stuff to deal with. Hopefully they'll be loose and comfortable, just like a, you know, last night of a four-night run or something. You know, that's often where we see this stuff sort of open up. So maybe that'll provide some new frontiers for improv.
And I'm glad they've got a handful of shows before they start the Baker's Dozen run. I it'll be good that they'll won't be coming in cold to that run.
Scott, what's your sort of take on just what this? I think there's been a lot of people sad or freaked out or whatever about this. You know, the Baker's Dozen being the representative of the shows they're playing this year. Do you feel like it represents just a break for them, or do you see this as the start of a trend?
I don't think it's a trend. You know, maybe if the shows would have sold out immediately, it might be a little different, but I think they've always wanted to do something different when it came to touring. They talked about the Missing States tour and stuff like that. And, you know, they finally put their money where their mouth is and, you know, did something unusual. And but I don't do I think as they get older, will they continue to play more multi-night runs as opposed to touring? Sure, but I don't see this being that representative of what's to come. I think we're talking more of a fall tour similar to what the Grateful Dead did towards the end, where they'd play between 3 and 6 nights at a venue and then move on and wind up playing 30 shows at 6 or 7 venues.
That worked out pretty well for them, I think.
I think it did, and certainly for fans it did.
Especially New York City fans.
Or in the Northeast in general.
Right. So you're doing High Sierra, which I've heard wonderful things about. You're going to catch like Lock-In or do any of the East Coast stuff? You're gonna...
I would say Lock-In would be the, you know, most probable on my list for now. You know, between High Sierra and the Baker's Dozen, there's a lot on my plate. So we'll see how I'm feeling when I get through that. But I went to the last two Lock-Ins. I really enjoyed it. I like the bones of the lineup that they've announced so far. So I could certainly see myself doing that again.
I had a lot of fun there last year. So it was pretty good. Should we talk about this Fish concert CD release?
Let's get into it.
You know, we've talked a little bit about why you were excited about it, so maybe we should just talk about, let's get right into talking about the first show and then break it down.
It's interesting. The first show, as we talked about, was the one that I was laser focused on. But in having a chance to listen to a review copy of it, it was really the second show that I was there were more surprises, and you know, I wasn't as familiar with that show. But there's really great moments in both nights. And you know, they start off, they came out with Buried Alive, and you know, this is a band that had been, we're talking April 14th, they had been on the road since the beginning of February, so they're 8 weeks into a cross-country tour. I mean, they were so incredibly tight, and even stuff like Maze or Divided Sky that, you know, you wouldn't normally stick out, they were just playing with such fury and, you know, the sense of rapidness and machine gunning those songs are interesting too. And you know, things really get crazy at a Stash, and there's an amazing Stash that winds up going into Kung territory. Thank you. Then they finish Stash, and you know, Mike starts singing Kung in German, and it's just as wild as it sounds, over the most extended horse in Phish history here.
Right.
I made that up, but I bet it is.
I think you might be right about that. I know I texted RJ when I was listening to this show the other day, and I was like, geez, the Stash, you guys, it gets... Because it gets dark quick.
Yeah.
Well before Kung comes into play, you know, the show is really tight, and I'm a big fan of Stash. So I had been kind of digging. I thought the ice was really particularly tight and nice little. The break was interesting, but not too weird. And then the Stash, so it gets dark really fast. And I texted RJ. I was like, oh my gosh, you got to hear this. And then the Kung came out of there. I hadn't listened to this show, and I don't even know when. Probably I have, and yeah. It really set me back a little.
I wasn't super familiar with this particular show, and Scott's interesting that you were, and some of that is just like when we got tapes or recordings or which ones happened to fall in, you know, at which times, because I don't remember really listening to this that much among all the shows, but that's a really cool segment. I think we should we play a little bit of that Kung horse craziness?
Let's do it.
Stage a runaway golf cart marathon. We must stage a runaway golf cart marathon. We must stage a runaway.
To the ground and set a different course. Cause if I were here and you were there, I'd meet you in between. And not until my dying day confess what I have seen.
That was weird, actually. That's, I think, what I really want to say about it. That was pretty weird. But there, you know, the rest of the show continues to be really great. There's a big ball jam, and I almost want to pick nits against Fish calling that a spooky Fish Net calling that a spooky jam. I didn't see what the tracking is on the album.
Paige does sing it,
right?
Does sing a verse, but you know what I really love so much about the second set and the encore is the story behind it. So one of Trey's good friends from the Princeton Mafia, like, that he grew up with, such as Tom Marshall, is Roger Holloway. And Roger wound up in St. Louis. And Trey brought out Roger and his girlfriend at the beginning of the second set. And Roger proposed to his wife, or his girlfriend at the time, Jen, who said yes. And then Fish lights into AC/DC Bag, which has got a lyric that references Roger.
Sit on and take notice.
there's kind of this celebratory feel that continues throughout the whole set. And even into the encore, you know, when Fish starts up Contact, Trace says this is for Roger and Jen as they embark on the road of life. And I thought that was really cool. And there's just no weak points whatsoever, you know, besides the spooky jam in Yem. You also have a Harpua where Trey tells us a story about dreams and, you know, quotes of the Jetsons theme song in there and Dreamweaver. It's just really the show is fairly relentless. It's incredible.
Scott, you mentioned this is like 8 weeks into their tour, and it's an interesting time in their history because this is maybe 92 is sort of like this, but 93 seems to, in my memory, to be the first year of like full-on cross-country touring, like for most of the year with some breaks in between, but it's an incredibly prolific time for them.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny you say that. I kind of feel like this and Spring Summer Tour 94 is kind of the end of their Road Warrior days. Mm-hmm. It was after 94 that they would get into a pattern of taking the first 6 months off of the year and then playing a lot in the back end of the year, be it summer tour followed by fall tour and New Year's. You know, and 93 and 94, they just hit it so hard. They were pretty much on the road the whole period of 93 and 94, except for the few months that they were recording Hoist in Los Angeles. So even when they weren't on the road together, they were still together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's something about four guys on a bus or in a studio, you know, that together, that is just they come up with these great ideas from night to night and pull them off and talk about it face to face instead of having to do it over text like they do now or however it is. So these were really the glory days.
And you mentioned the Machine Gun. I mean, the relentlessness of the music is just, man, every song is just nailed, you know, from beginning to end. There's not I don't think there's, for the flub people out there, you know, there's not a lot to catch in a show like this.
Yep. My notes list was really short.
Well, before we move on to talking about the August show, should we play a little bit of that You Enjoy Myself spooky jam?
Now, before we do that, I should point out that this first show does comply with the rule. It has a Buried Alive opener, and it's awesome.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, so, this complies with Jonathan's rules, so it's important to know before we get into this. So keep that in mind as you listen to this jam. Thank you. When they announced this, I was like, St. Louis 93, like, I have no idea what that means, because neither of these shows popped to mind, and I was thinking of a run or a group of shows, and it's pretty interesting that they chose the two shows from St. Louis. It must have some significance to Shapiro or whoever, as it did to you. Any, I don't know, any sort of ideas on why they paired these two shows out of, because we were just talking before the music about how they played so many shows in 93. You could go in any number of directions when bringing a couple shows together for a release. But what's your theory on these two?
I think it's two very different shows. I think there are just a couple of repeats, and even something like It's Ice sounds completely different from one show to the next. It does. And it's a rare situation where you've got a band coming through and playing the same venue, the same city, but two completely different shows, kind of similar to the situation they had with Ventura, where it was a year apart, but still two very different shows.
Yeah, true.
Both under-circulated and with audience recordings that weren't great. And, you know, I think what better than to just release one show than to release two shows? And it was just, you know, I hadn't thought about it, but I'm glad that's why I'm not the one making those decisions.
Right. Well, in August 93, I mean, as we get into talking about 816, I mean, Jonathan, it's one of his most frequently cited months, I think. And just incredible shows, incredible run.
It's kind of a big deal.
It's every single show has something to offer all the way through to the closer from the Greek. But this one is interesting. There's a nice early first set Reba that's really fantastic that I feel like kicks off the show.
I would say top five. It's in top five Reba's without a doubt. And what I really love about this show is if you look at the set list on Fishnet, since they redid the site, they put little headphones next to the highlights. And there are four headphones in the first set alone. They put it for Possum, which is a very unusual version, Reba, which, you know, orgasmic, multi-tiered, as I was saying, top five. foam, which resolves in an unusual way, and a dark, dirty, nasty split open and melt. I mean, and that's just the first set.
That's pretty crazy to think about, actually, those four together, especially the Reba foam and split open and melt. Unbelievable. Do you feel like Reba, do you feel like 93 is a particularly good year for Reba in your mind? Is it like, do any of your other top fives fall in 93?
I don't know. I would say 93 through 95 is my favorite period. You know, I would say the one from Lowell from May 16th, 95 is definitely in my top five, as is Halloween 94. You know, in more recent, it's been a while, but I believe there was in 2010, there was a really good one. I think you can't go wrong in 92 through 95 with Ariba.
August 93, I've talked about it far too much, so I won't harp on it, but they really were, after all the touring they had been doing throughout the year, up to that point, they were, and by this point, they were able to really break loose in their jamming and their improvisation. And they were, you know, I mean, they do it in Possum, you know, and in Foam, you know, they really just kind of bust out. They do it again in the second set. They do it in Mike's, and which I thought was a pretty good Mike's. It doesn't have the little headphones on it, but
agreed. I would put the headphones there. There's a cool little like Possum-y jam. It's like almost like Possum reprise.
Thank you.
Do you guys know how do you, is it fat?
I always call it fat.
I think fat. Yeah. Yeah.
Windham Hell.
Yeah, that's how back in the day it used to be referred to. But yeah, I mean, talk about a wild song to be thrown in the middle of Mike's Weekapa. And you've got to remember that, you know, from 88 through the beginning of 93, it was Mike's Hydrogen Weekapa. That was it. There was no getting around it. And then they finally started changing that in 1993 and got very crazy with what they put in the middle of Mike's Weekapa. My favorite being Mike's Leprechaun Weekapa and Mike's Great Gig in the Sky. And Weekapa is always good.
Yeah.
But really, it was 93 where they were playing Mike's Weekapa every other night and throwing crazy stuff in between the two songs.
Yeah. Well, let's maybe we should listen to just a touch of that Weekapog now. So we just listened to a little bit of that Weak Pog, and so the rest of the set, Scott, there was a another acoustic intro, and my friend, these two shows, there's a lot of acoustic guitar interludes, which is kind of interesting. Hadn't noticed that before.
I miss those days where Trey had an acoustic on a stand. I never saw any of those shows, and it was gone by the time I started seeing them in April of 94. So I think it was just the 1993 thing where Trey had the acoustic guitar on a stand.
Right, and it was only 93.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And it led to a number of really cool moments, like the horse in the first show. And they extend the beginning of My Friend a little bit here as well.
Man, and then they have some... The Big Ball Jam stuff is just kind of nonsensical to me. Jonathan loves it. You're probably a Vocal Jam fan too, aren't you?
Sure, man. I also listen to drums when it comes on a tape. So. All
right, that's actually for another podcast, isn't it?
That's true.
But that's a plug for Broke Down Podcast. So then this show ends with a rockin' Good Times, Bad Times. There's not a better closer, really, for the way that they're playing in 93 than Good Times, Bad Times.
And I imagine they had to get out of town quick or something with that Amazing Grace Rocky Top encore. It must have taken... 2 or 3 minutes, but it got to remember it's Amazing Grace. They, without any microphones, they just the four guys standing at the front of this old theater in downtown St. Louis, belting out Amazing Grace with no microphones or anything, and the crowd is pretty attentive, and that was something they were unable to do for very much longer after 94, a little bit in 95.
Yeah, and the Knockout Rocky Top, they must have been leaning up on curfew because they were only going to Kansas City for the next show.
So yeah, that's a good point.
Not like they had a long haul for the next night.
I want to just about the geography of this, Jonathan, sorry to interrupt, just to give some context to the what Scott said earlier, just about how they were, the peak of the Road Warrior phase. So that week, on the 11th of August, they were in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the 12th in another show in Michigan, 13th, of course, the Murat in Indianapolis, then they go up to Chicago on the 14th, back to Louisville on the 15th, then this show in St. Louis on the 16th, then Kansas City on the 17th, and then they had a break to get out to the Red Rocks. But, I mean, that's an incredible amount of travel and shows every single night for that many nights in a row. I mean, can you imagine? I can't even imagine just driving to all those places in my car and, like, sleeping in a hotel and then doing that the next day, let alone setting up and playing shows in between.
And those shows were all legendary.
Yeah, right. They're all great.
Yeah. Not only are they putting on all those miles in such short time, but they're playing amazing music every night. It's pretty impressive. I'm wondering, somebody ought to take up the task of visualizing all of these tours as a Google Maps overlay so we can see where they were and the mileage and the... So there's a homework for somebody out there.
I wanted to rephrase my statement and say I would be very tired if I flew in a plane from all these cities in that amount of days, let alone driving in a car.
Driving would be better.
It's crazy. So, Scott, looking back on this, I mean, this is really good stuff, and we appreciate you. I'm glad that it's so, personally fulfilling to you to get this release. So that's awesome. After you were able to listen to a release copy, and everyone should get it when it comes out on the 31st, and we've been going back to the audience recordings, but Scott, you got to listen to a little bit of the release copy. What are your kind of overall takeaways after listening through?
The sound quality was even better than I'd hoped for. It really is incredible, and even though it's not from 64 track recordings like a live one is, Paul knew how to tape the shows, and they've been remastered, and they sound great, and it's a really cool look at an amazing period in Fish's history. And they were playing for, it was crazy to think that they were playing at this small venue and were so good, a year later. later, they would go from a venue in New York City, playing a venue the size of the American in St. Louis, being the Beacon, to, by the end of the year, selling out Madison Square Garden. So, you know, they were still hungry, and still a lot of people didn't know who they were, and they crushed it on a nightly basis, and this is a great example of where they were at that time.
Well said. Jonathan, would anything to add from your perspective?
Well, I think you touched on it earlier, which is that 93 began with them with the new baby grand piano and, you know, a shift to their sound. And then they, as we've kind of covered, then they hit the road and they hit it really hard. And this release spans these two points of a band growing into a new sound, and then, you know, taking all of that experience and really breaking through to what will eventually become yet another new sound. We touched on it in the Tweezer episode, how 93 was, you know, their jamming would often, you know, they would find another song and they would go with that. And so you hear the Gypsy Queen teases and the Weekapaw, things like that, and they go with it there. And then, you know, this is in August, and by the next year, they're making entirely new music in those points, and really just expanding their jamming. So this is a great document of that transition for the band.
Yeah, they were more like ADD in 1993 versus in 94 and 95. They were exploring things, one theme for a longer period of time, instead of just, you know, toying with one idea and then quickly going to the next one. But I love that adventurousness and, you know, the ADD, you know, work on one theme real quick and then move to the next one. And, you know, they just had covered so much ground, you know, as an example, just in that Reba alone.
And it almost feels like they're continuously kind of pushing forward even through to the New Year's show with the, you know, the Down with Disease jam out of Auld Lang Syne on New Year's Eve. That just, it feels like they just can't wait to keep moving forward. Whereas I was thinking, as you were saying that, Scott, the same thing, like some later years, they're kind of not falling back like in a lazy way, but just sort of like getting more comfortable in a space like that they were able to explore, as opposed to continuously pushing forward like they were in these days.
Yeah, they had something to prove, and it was clear.
Man, they did a good job.
Yeah. I'm convinced.
Yeah. Well,
I think so.
If you, as our listeners, are not convinced yet, then we will drop you a little bit of this foam to try and further convince you, because that was one thing we wanted to mention that we haven't listened to yet. So we'll play that on the back end of this. Scott, thanks so much for joining and for all the work you do at Jambase and for all the contributions to the Phish community. We appreciate everything you do.
I really appreciate that. And for those listening, really, you know, buy this release because we want more like it. And the only way it's going to happen is if people purchase what Phish puts out there. So I may have gotten a free copy, but I still ordered one from Dry Goods because I don't just want the downloads. I want the full package. I want to see the box and the cool artwork. So please, you know, support Phish's endeavors when it comes. If you like live archival releases like we do, you know, so support the band's efforts.
Absolutely, because I can see this summer will be the anniversary of The Great Went, so it'll be time for that. Next summer will be the anniversary of The Lemon Wheel, it'll be time for that. The following year will be time for Big Cypress, right?
It had been a long time since the last box set, so let's, you know, it was great. We got SPAC 95 out of nowhere a few weeks ago, so let's just all support what they're doing, and hopefully the vault keeps on releasing its goods to us.
That's a great point, and something that's really important to say. We gotta support it, so they'll keep bringing them out. And actually, one small plug is, Scott, they should really release that Lowell show from May from May of 95, because I feel like that's, I've never heard a good recording of that, and that's a, there's so many great gems on there, so that's my personal request.
Absolutely. I think they've done a couple on from the archives, but it would be nice for an official release, and I'd certainly love to see video, if any video of that exists. I'd love to see you know, Gloria Steinem on stage with Fish, and Fish play those songs like Lie 2 that they never played again.
Yeah, exactly. Man, that's a good one. All right, well, we will stop the wish list there, but that's an important plug, Scott, so thank you. And for those of you who don't follow Scott on Twitter, he's at HeyScottEB, and we appreciate Scott coming on, so thank you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks for coming on.